Coming up on Tech News Today, is the Xbox One another Google TV? HTC falling apart in public right in front of everybody. And the right pronunciation of the graphic interchange format. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT5. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. As more details followed Microsoft's Xbox One announcement yesterday, people have begun to worry that used games will not be allowed on the system. The confusion stems from Microsoft's requirement that games be installed to the hard drive. If the game is put in another box under another account, a fee would be charged to play that game. However, Microsoft's Larry Hrib said on his blog, "We designed Xbox One to enable our customers to trade in and resell games at retail." And Microsoft corporate VP Phil Harrison told Kotaku the company has a plan to allow gamers to trade previously played games online.
Google's got a new conversational search feature in the latest version of its Chrome browser for Windows, Mac, and Linux. You'll now see a small microphone symbol in the right-hand side of the search field, also at the top of the page containing search results, so you can ask Google questions from the desktop using your voice. Like Google Now, the service pulls information stored through other Google services. For example, you could ask when your flight was supposed to leave, and the service will check your Google Calendar. Using the phrase, "Okay, Google," you can move on to your next query, much like how it works in Google Glass.
I read the news today. Oh boy. The Verge says that HTC is a big friggin' mess right now. According to The Verge, HTC's chief product officer, Koji Kodera, left the company last week. He's the guy behind HTC's entire product strategy. HTC also lost a number of high-level employees in the past several months. Sources tell The Verge that the company is in free fall and that people are actively avoiding joining the company's Seattle software design office.
Steve Wilhite, creator of the graphics interchange format, the most popular format for things like animated graphics on the web, received a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Webbies last night. Wilhite has made a ruling on the proper pronunciation of the acronym for the format. The Oxford English Dictionary says the acronym can be pronounced with a hard or soft G. Wilhite says they are wrong and stated it is a soft G.
Oh, what does he know anyway? Sheesh. Pew Research knows what teens want, and teens don't want Facebook. Although 77% of teenagers polled said that they're on Facebook, and that their profiles are helpful as extensions for their school networks, many teens say drama over things like likes or profile pictures, or the fact that too many adults are also on Facebook, have them deleting posts, deleting others' comments, and untagging themselves from photos. 75% said that they've deleted people from their network, and 58% had blocked somebody from contacting them. So in other words, save the Facebook drama for your mama.
You say you want a revolution? Well, you know, we all want to change the world, especially Intel's new CEO, Brian Krzanich. Reuters reports that Krzanich has begun a large-scale reorganization of the company, including the creation of a new devices group that will focus on emerging product trends. Under the new setup, the main product groups will operate directly under Krzanich. Intel's president, Renee James, will handle the global manufacturing operations.
All right, we're holding because I was trying to reconnect with Tom, and now it's having a hard time reconnecting.
It's all right. Tom has reordered our news fuses, so you can go right to me.
Excellent. Boom.
They promised us 6 months ago, and now Nokia's finally updated Here Maps with Live Sight available today in the Windows Phone App Store and requiring Windows Phone 8. By tapping a button in Here Maps, users can enter Live Sight mode, which will scan the surrounding area and pull up relevant information about locations nearby, addresses, phone numbers, ratings. Nokia's City Lens app will also recognize the virtual signs attached to buildings viewed through the camera display, and it also has very handy offline access.
Another day on Kickstarter, another smartwatch to back, but a new one called Agent is to distinguish itself from the others with some nifty power management. The team of engineers at Secret Labs built two processors in the watch, so a low-power one saves battery life when background processes are all that's needed. A sharp memory display also saves some battery, so the watch can go 7 days without charging. Additionally, Agent comes with the key wireless charging capability. Early backers can get the watch for $129. Final retail is expected to be $249.
If you've got purple haze all up in your brain, you'll be interested to know that Scanadu has finalized its Scout TriCaster design. Today, the company launched an Indiegogo campaign where it sought to raise $100,000. As of 9 a.m. Pacific, the company already had nearly $175,000. The Scanadu Scout can track plenty of vital signs, including your stress level, temperature, and systolic blood pressure. The Scout gets its data by using optical sensors and delivers it to you in 10 seconds.
Western Digital subsidiary HGST has introduced the densest hard drive yet with the new TravelStar 5K1500. It's a 2.5-inch, 9.5-millimeter model with a capacity of 1.5 terabytes. That's 694 gigabits per square inch, although it only spins at 5,400 RPM. No price yet, but it should be available in June. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. Since its platform upgrade last fall, Squarespace has just kept rolling out the hits, baby. New product features, new integrations, new templates, plus with plans starting as low as $8 a month for software and hosting. You get a real value. They're there 24/7 for you by email or chat. And you actually get the reliable servers of Squarespace that keep your site up. Regularly adding new features all the time. They just added a new calendar feature you might have heard of called Events Collection. Allows you to share scheduled updates, things like store sales events, band tour dates. And they released a beautiful new template called Momentum, which has cinematic full bleed image display. It's perfect if you're a designer or a photographer or a fashion person. Somebody wants to show off their work. You got to check out Squarespace. It's fast and easy to use, too. If you know CSS and HTML, you can get in there and edit it. But their page builder tool called Layout Engine makes even people like me who know HTML not want to bother with it because you just add blocks of content, things like photos, videos, text, social media, or even HTML code. Squarespace provides a powerful and flexible tool for mobile, for e-commerce, for social media. They integrate it all into one platform. Domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, and 24/7 customer support. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account, no credit card needed. Just try it out, start building your website. Then, if you decide to purchase it, which I think you might, use offer code TNT5. Don't just plunk down. Use this code TNT5 because that gets you 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, whether they're monthly or annual plans. Don't forget about free domain registrations for annual plan customer subscriptions. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT5. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, Julio Ojeda Zapata, tech writer from the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Welcome back to the show, Julio. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Xbox One, Sarah. More details have been leaking out since after the announcement.
Yeah, and we all sort of went around the horn yesterday saying, well, what are our first thoughts about the Xbox really being pushed as that everything in one device launch rather than just a really, really cool console for gamers. So, we heard that you can issue commands and the device will react to your gestures because it's got a Kinect sensor. So you can control it with a smartphone and a tablet via the integrated smart glass service. That all sounds really great as a cord cutter. I love the idea of it kind of going the extra mile. You got voice activated channel switching. If you're watching a sports game, you might be able to bring up a statistic sort of on a top layer above that. That all sounds really great. Well, Nilay Patel has a great write-up over at The Verge, and he says, listen, this is exactly what Google TV was doing, And that, you know, that whole thing is kind of flailing. But even more importantly, this is exactly what Microsoft's Web TV did back in the day. For all of us who remember Web TV, it was somewhat before its time, and it didn't work that well, and so it didn't catch on. He says, if you're not watching live TV, this whole thing isn't going to work with your DVR. It's not going to control your Roku box. If you have a newer cable box that lets you change channels via HDMI, I guess that's pretty cool, but it's just a layer on top of your TV service. It's not actually controlling your TV service. And in many cases, you're going to have to use an IR blaster to control your cable or your satellite box. That doesn't always work. They can get out of sync very easily. And since this is the launch in the US, TV is very fragmented here. All this is really doing is adding another box to the variety of boxes that someone like me might already have on my entertainment stand. And if you're not gaming, well, why are you going to pay all that money? We don't know exactly how much it's going to be yet. But Julio, what do you think about the idea of the Xbox really wanting to become your entertainment service as well as a gaming service? Is this good enough?
Well, I was disappointed on a number of fronts. I was disappointed that it didn't have cable card support. There's no way to just jack your Comcast feed directly into the thing. There's no tuner over the air. You know, receiving over the air HD programming is important for at least some cord cutters. So I was disappointed that it didn't have that. So you end up with a situation where you're just cluttering up your entertainment center instead of consolidating. Maybe the aerial service will be available at some point, but probably not initially. So as a TV device, I have sort of mixed feelings. The pass-through, though, with the Xbox interface being an overlay over my TV interface, I like that a lot. I like that Google TV did that, and I like that this Xbox device will do that as well.
Ayaz, what do you think? If you don't have a built-in tuner, you can't use an over-the-air signal with the new Xbox. That's certainly something that, you know, I think is lacking. Does the Xbox sort of miss where the whole cord-cutting movement is going?
I don't think the Xbox is actually aimed for the cord-cutting movement, really. It's about getting your time, and they want you to be using their games. You know, I've read Nilay Patel's work for a long time, and I love him. I think he's a genius, but I totally disagree with his assessment of this. Live TV being the big draw for Xbox, yeah, that's why they were talking about the NFL and sports, because sports matters for live. When it comes to other events, they also talk about the Oscars and other events that would make it more social. That makes sense to me for certain things like this. But if you want an on-demand service, Xbox has that covered too. They have their own video services, their own internet music services. And Google TV, that, I don't know if it's a fair comparison. Google TV was supposed to be an inexpensive box. They didn't have the content partnerships. They didn't have the app support. At least Microsoft has apps for itself. So I don't know if Xbox is a cord-cutter device so much as it's the game console that can do video, that can also interact with your cable box. It's not your one box, it's your other box.
Tom, we've had almost about 24 hours to absorb everything that Microsoft rolled out yesterday and think about the features. Does this seem like a truly integrated device, or is this still gaming first and other stuff, the way
I... We've had 24 hours. I declare it a failure. No, I'm just kidding. I think that I disagree with Ayaz and Nilay in a way. I think Microsoft definitely is targeting the Xbox One toward the cord cutter, but not right now. I think what they're trying to do is say, hey, we have a lot of the things you want in the Xbox One, so maybe you could make the trip. But I don't disagree with Ayaz that this isn't the thing that is the one box. But I do think Microsoft wants it to be. And I agree with everything Nilay wrote as of now. I think this is suffering from the same problems as Google TV, although Ayaz makes a good point. They're targeted in different ways. Google TV is a cheap only TV solution, whereas Microsoft is also a video game player and all this other stuff. But I think the key here is to remember the lifetime of a console. It's 10 years. What Microsoft is looking at is saying, look, over in Europe, we actually have a television provider that is going to deliver their TV. I think they already are delivering TV service live streaming right to the Xbox, right? There is beta with Comcast where you can use your Xbox as your cable box right now. And I think what Microsoft is positioning them for is the eventual reality that more and more of these live TV services will be available directly over the internet, even though none of them in the U.S. are available right now.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all. Let's talk about poor HTC.
Let's do that.
They really are. Just a lot of times when you see these in disarray headlines, they're exaggerating. I don't think they are in this case.
Right, the headlines are reading HTC's in disarray, staff departures, disastrous first and production problems, cloud company's future. This is from The Verge. They're saying that HTC is a real mess right now. The reports are saying that HTC's chief product officer is gone. He left the company. In the past 3 months, HTC lost its VP of global communications, its global retail marketing manager, its director of digital marketing, a product strategy manager. It's also lost its HTC Asia's CEO. So they lost a bunch of talent up there. Two of those people left for Microsoft, one for AT&T. And there was one source telling The Verge that anyone who's heard of them in Seattle doesn't want to work for them right now. They're like T-Mobile 2 years ago. They're in utter free fall. They're also saying that HTC's CMO could be partially responsible because he's moving some planning and strategy from Seattle over to Taipei, whereas that's where HTC's headquarters is located. And there's also the issue of the HTC Facebook phone, that apparently the original plans were for the first to have an exclusive period of being the only phone with Facebook Home, and that deal got changed where Facebook put Facebook Home on Google Play, so they lost that. And apparently the HTC co-founder and CEO Peter Chow is apparently a roadblock, making snap decisions in lieu of a long-term strategy. Julio, does it sound like HTC is imploding at this point?
Well, based on what I read, Chow also has been very inflexible about making design changes. He's had some very fixed ideas about how he wants the devices to be designed, and he stuck to those, you know, perhaps a little too long. I think whoever designed the one, you know, scored a victory, but the victory might have been late, which is a little heartbreaking for me because it's the one is my favorite Android phone at the moment. And this somewhat resembles Microsoft with Windows Phone and, you know, BlackBerry and so forth. They're coming along and making these great products, but their timing may be tragic at this point.
Sarah, with this kind of this flux and turmoil, do you think that HTC is a prime candidate for being acquired by another company? They haven't been making a lot of money. They make some beautiful hardware, but right now they're kind of a mess when it comes to management.
Why, Ayaz, I do believe you might recall back in December in our prediction show, I predicted this very outcome, that HTC would be bought by Samsung. Now, I don't have any information to show that Samsung even wants HTC at this point, but I don't think that you can spin this as anything but a free fall at this point. I mean, you've got management leaving in droves. You've got people who used to work at the company saying, you don't want to work there. You've got people saying the CEO is you know, these are impulsive decisions, not long-term decisions. You've got the HTC first, which could, I guess, claim first, but really, you know, it looks like Facebook pulled back because they don't believe in HTC. And I think that's really the only reason to kind of do an about face saying, well, let's make Home available on the Google Play Store. You can be first, but we don't think that you're a strong enough launch partner for us to really be exclusive. All of that stuff hurts HTC. And having nice phones just simply isn't enough because there are other companies who have nice phones as well, you know, particularly when you think of the Android ecosystem. So it doesn't look good.
Tom, what do you make of this? This looks like a mess to me. I'm thinking that HTC definitely needs a shakeup. Do you think they've got a chance to turn it around?
I doubt it. Not the way it's looking, right? I mean, sure. Do they have a chance to turn it around? Of course they have a chance to turn it around. I've seen companies in worse shape than this turn it around. But right now, it does not look like they're making the moves to turn it around. I mean, when Eric Lin is saying to all my friends at HTC, just quit, leave now, you don't see people, even people that I know feel that way about companies, going to Twitter and saying that. I mean, this is obviously a toxic environment right now. And if HTC can't keep people working for them, they're definitely not going to turn it around.
Yes, C-Sound in the chat room is making a joke of breaking news. One has left HTC for Microsoft based on the Xbox One name. Yeah, they seem to be in a lot of trouble. I think HTC does have some beautiful hardware right now. And if they can somehow stay afloat in the next couple of months, they might be able to make this a turnaround. But if management is actually the problem, and we've seen what management can do with companies with RIM, which is now BlackBerry. You've seen what kind of damage they can do. If that doesn't change, HTC could be doomed, or it could be acquired by any company, maybe Samsung, maybe Facebook, because Facebook's always thrown around billions of dollars. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
possibly
Google's
Amazon.
New conversational search feature launched in Chrome 27. If you haven't upgraded Chrome 27, close your browser and relaunch. You'll probably get it. The way it works, you go to google.com. This is interesting. You can't do it from the search bar. You have to go to google.com, click on the microphone, and say what you want. The idea is that you could just say, hey, find me some restaurants that serve meatballs, and it'll give you a list of those restaurants or whatever. You do have to give the mic approval the first time you use it, but after that, you don't. Subsequent searches supposedly can start with the phrase, okay, Google, and it will keep listening to you. Although I tried that today, and it couldn't get that part to work for some reason. Everything else worked just fine, with varying results, maybe a little better than Siri. I don't know. Have you guys tried this out? Julio, have you given this a spin yet?
Yeah, I played with it a little bit. I'll preface this by saying I'm not crazy about talking to devices, but I tried some test searches this morning. I said, where is Twit? And it pulled up Twitter. where is Tom Merritt? Fine. Where is Sarah Lane? No way. And then I tried I Am Hungry. And it very helpfully pulled up a whole bunch of restaurants and said and told me, you know, these are some restaurants near you. And that worked great. But when I said I am thirsty, it pulled up like Wikipedia articles of what thirst is. So it's a little unpredictable.
That's almost naggy. You don't know what thirst is. This is what being thirsty is like. Sarah, have you messed around with this? Have you had any success with it?
I haven't, actually. Although what's interesting about this is, and I know that it's, you know, it's designed to be conversational, right? So the whole point is you don't have to think of things in search terms anymore. You just have to make a query the way that you'd be asking a friend. And I don't really feel like Google search, as far as like entering a search query, is really that broken. Maybe it's just because I've been so conditioned to think robotically, you know, in terms of how do I get the search result to be at the top that I want to find. But I find that, I mean, I sometimes type complete sentences with a little question mark at the end, and it's kind of just the way that I'd say it out loud, and I get the result I want. So it's probably something that's better than I realize.
I agree with you there that the big advantage here isn't the querying to me. At least I don't see that yet, because I don't have a big problem with Google search either. It's the idea of being able to just say what you want instead of typing it in. I guess that's appealing, although I sort of side with Julio. I don't want to talk to my devices all the time. This morning, I'm trying to keep quiet. People are asleep while I'm preparing for tech news today. I don't want to have to talk. You know, I couldn't really. I had to go downstairs and close the door to test it. That's not very convenient. What do you think of all this?
I think it's going to be something that people get used to. I think I'm more used to talking to my Android phone than I am to my desktop or my laptop or something like that, because my desktop requires me to talk into the microphone, which is I have to bring the arm over. Or my laptop, I'm usually clacking around on it, so it's probably not going to be the best solution. I think it's because it's so brand new, we're all thinking, no, we're not going to talk to a device. But then again, I didn't think I'd be asking Google all these questions on my phone. And it works just fine. So now I'm just realizing there are some searches I want to check. I just haven't had a search that requires multiple questions, because in the search demo, the idea that you could use pronouns and you could dig deeper with this kind of search query, that seemed to be the real usage for something like this. And as of right now, I haven't had a lot of opportunities for that.
I definitely had a couple of hilarious misinterpretations. Also, every time I tried OK Google, it would just type out OK Google and make that part of the search query.
Yeah, that's not helpful.
Yeah, not good.
That didn't work for me.
I think the general trend of a sort of, for a while it was like people talking on their phones in public, and that became like, you're talking on your phone in public, you seem like you're talking to yourself. Now it's like everyone's looking down at their phones and being really silent, so less disruptive, but maybe, you know, less social in general. And now you've got all this technology about talking to your devices. And I just wonder how much anybody wants this. It's cool if it works. But as far as, again, living in public is concerned, it kind of, for me, goes back to that disruptive tech that I didn't really like that much in the first place.
Well, maybe, Sarah, Google's trying to make people more social, because you could actually ask people these same questions instead of just typing into Google. So they overhear you and you're like, wait, I can help you with that.
That works great for somebody who knows
just
people.
Just live alone, Tom, and you won't have to worry about waking all your friends up that are staying
Google
in your living
room. Be my friend.
And if you add glass to the mix, this suddenly makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point. And I think Ayaz is right. I'm being a little bit of an old man. Like, I don't want to talk to my things.
I didn't call you old man.
Well, I did. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, ProXPN. Whether you're old or young, you're going to want to try this out. If you're out and about, coffee shop maybe, using some public Wi-Fi, you should be aware, if you're watching any Twitch shows, that it's really easy to slurp up those packets if you're a bad guy on that same network. So protect yourself. Protect yourself from the hackers. Protect yourself from prying governments, from prying ISPs, from corporations that want to track too much information about you. Control what data others can see and what they can't by using a VPN provider. And one of the ones I use is ProXPN. I was using it this morning, actually. Global VPN works with almost any internet connection, creates a secure encrypted tunnel through which all of your online data passes back and forth. I can do all the things I normally do. I can stream video. I can listen to music. I can surf the web. But any online application works. But your data is hidden from prying eyes. Complete online privacy, 512-bit encryption tunnel, works by OpenVPN or PPTP if that's something you're concerned with. You can protect yourself against a six strikes rule, accidentally identifying you mistakenly. You can bypass internet filtering and blocked websites when they're unjustly imposed on you. Bypass geographical restrictions for internet content and online video. ProXPN software for Windows and Mac offers advanced controls, allowing you to select the programs and ports you want to anonymously route through ProXPN servers. I got a lot of different servers to choose from all around the world. World-class customer support. And the thing that convinced me to use ProXPN, Steve Gibson gave it a great review on Security Now. So go to proxpn.com/twit. That's pro and the letters XPNN, proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $10 a month. It's only $75 for an entire year. It's not expensive, but we've got a special offer. If you use the code TNT, you're going to get 20% off the lifetime of your account. It's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So no reason not to try it out. Go to proxpn.com/twit. Use that offer code TNT. And we thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. All right. We all have been wondering for years how Twitter's going to make money, and they've come up with a few answers, and they've got a new one to add to the stack. Right, Sarah?
Yes, that's right. It's called the lead generation Twitter cards. I guess you could read it as lead generation, but I'm quite sure
that sounds
it's lead.
Dangerous to children. Yeah,
exactly. So what these are, they are tweets from a brand, call it a coffee shop, right? That you can then expand to get more details on a particular offer that is included with a call to action. The neat thing about this is let's say, okay, some coffee shop that I really like is some brand that has one of these lead generation Twitter cards. I go ahead and expand it. I say, ooh, they're going to have a special on a latte. I want that. I go ahead and, in order to redeem this offer, Twitter already knows what my email address is and my information because it's pre-populated with that information because I already have a live Twitter account. So there's really no need to do much except that one click, yes, I want the offer type of a thing. And then the brand knows that I like them. So everyone kind of wins. Now, Mitali Patniak, who's the product manager over at Revenue at Twitter, says, for right now, the company is testing this feature just with a handful of brands. They included a few, New Relic, Full Sail, Priceline, to name a few, and says, for now, they're only available to our managed clients. We don't have a full list of who those clients are, but there's plans to launch card globally and to small and medium-sized businesses soon. So these lead generation Twitter cards eventually should be available to all businesses. What's not clear to me is this just something that you could integrate with a promoted tweet that, any brand can basically pay for? Or is this something that's just showing up in a regular tweet stream? I would have to assume the former makes more sense because if I'm not following the brand in the first place, how will I ever see this special? Julio, how do you think this is going to roll out? Do you think this is a good revenue model for Twitter?
Well, first, worst name for a Twitter feature ever.
Right.
But the name confused the hell out of me. I was trying to understand this, but I guess I reached the conclusion that this is somewhat similar to liking a brand's page on Facebook. And I think part of Twitter's rationale for this is exactly that, to compete for Facebook, with companies that are offering, goods or services. So in that sense, it's great. And I'm sure I will find it extremely annoying until a brand that I worship comes along and then I'll suddenly love the feature. So
Ayaz, what do you think? Is this something that seems like it would be buried in, you know, the flood of tweets that come through your feed every day? Or does this seem like something that you would use?
I think it's like if my friends are tweeting these things, let's say that brand that Julio's talking about, I bet for me that'd be Amazon. So if I saw like an Amazon gold box deal and Sarah, you liked it or you retweeted it or something, and I'd be able to expand it right in Twitter, that might get my attention a lot. I think this has to do a lot with the way it's executed. The amount of information that's put in a tweet, I think it's starting to get a little much because you're getting a lot of content. What used to be this little 140 character thing, but for offers and deals where you want to see more information, I do see this being of use to a lot of people because you want to expand to get a little bit more information before clicking off of Twitter and moving on to purchasing something perhaps. It looks like an interesting idea, and Twitter's probably going to make a lot of money on this.
Tom, what do you think? Aya says it might be messy. I kind of like the way that tweets are expanded because when they're collapsed, they kind of just look like any other tweet and there's information sort of hidden in there. Do you think this is good enough, or are we getting a little bit too messy?
I tend to think, and I want to see how I react when I actually see one in the wild, right? But I tend to think, like you, that this is not going to bother me. I'm not going to notice it because, like a picture, I'm going to have to click on it to expand it. And if I am looking at a tweet that says, hey, pre-order here, and I click on to expand it, I probably want to pre-order. And so I probably love the fact that I can have a lot of my information pre-populated there and just say, yeah, put me on the list or, you know, get me more information when I want to, because I'm in charge of the relationship. And if I don't want to, I never click to expand it. So it shouldn't bother me at all. I think it's also a really clever way of Twitter getting around their own 140 character limit without violating the 140 character limit. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I do.
Let's talk about Amazon.
Sure.
Fan fiction. Amazon debuting Kindle Worlds. Now, fan fiction is a problem sometimes because the authors may not want you to do this. Is this going to help clear that up, Ayaz?
In theory, yes, for at least a limited amount of things. So Amazon announced a new publishing platform, as you mentioned, called Kindle Worlds. It's for fan fiction. Amazon picked up licenses for several properties, Gossip Girl, Pretty Little Liars, and Vampire Diaries. The Kindle Worlds platform lets any author publish stories using these characters and then makes that available, those stories available for purchase via the Kindle store. Now, Amazon is paying a royalty to the author and the original rights holder. Fan fiction authors get 35% royalties on full-length works and 20% on shorter ones. Kindle Worlds store will launch in June, and Amazon says it plans to announce more licenses soon. Julio, is this the greatest thing ever for fan fiction?
Well, I'm pretty sure I know what's going to happen in fairly short order. A lot of fan fiction is extremely racy, and so we're gonna see some 50 Shades type content coming on the scene pretty soon. But just more generally speaking, I'm really excited about companies like Amazon creating more and more opportunities for people to publish their stuff electronically. I was reading Guy Kawasaki's APE, author, I forget what the acronym stands for, but it's Guy Kawasaki's his manual for self-publishing a book. And reading the book, I was surprised how many different mechanisms exist for getting your content published online. And as somebody who's writing a self-published ebook, this is a very exciting time. So this is part of that.
Tom, do you think this library of Gossip Girl, Pretty Little Liars, and Vampire Diaries is going to make a dent, or are you waiting for the inevitable Star Wars license?
I am doing just that. I have mixed opinions here, right? It's not the content. We can make jokes all day long about Gossip Girl versus Star Wars fan fiction on both sides of that aisle, frankly. But on the one hand, I am a believer that there's probably a lot of fan fiction that doesn't need approval. It should have a fair use defense. And it just points down to that long, boring conversation about copyright law that we have all the time about how it's totally broken. So I don't want this to be seen as a reason why we don't need to modify copyright law. But given the situation on the ground today with the way copyright is, I kind of think this is awesome that you can say, hey, let's have a patch that says if the author's cool with it, you can do it here. You can get paid for your efforts. They can get paid for their efforts. Everybody wins. I think it's pretty brilliant on Amazon's part, frankly.
Sarah, we've got a bunch of competing electronic bookstores out there. You got Amazon, iBooks, Barnes & Noble. Is this going to make Amazon seem that much better? They have a larger catalog, but do people want to read fan fiction?
Okay, so before Sunday afternoon, I might have said no. However, I and some friends had discovered a large treasure trove of Adam Levine fan fiction. True story. Yes, true story. I don't have to go into it any more than this, but Julio's right when he says racy.
Mm-hmm.
People like him. So I realized, my gosh, there's a big world out there. Some of it is well-written. Some of it is not well-written. And I think what's interesting about this is it's kind of like, you know, when you get somebody sampling a song, you know, like everyone's favorite song, right? It's like sometimes it works really well and you're like, that was really cool. I really liked that whole mashup on the original idea. And sometimes you're like, ugh, they butchered the song. I hate that. And I feel like Amazon's saying, you know, some of this stuff is quality and we might as well try to put some rules in place where everybody can benefit. The cream is going to rise to the top and you're not necessarily just dismissing stuff that's, you know, called fan fiction because, you know, maybe it sounds like, ooh, people are obsessed with this. Some of it is actually quite good. I've read it.
It's been a while since I read any fan fiction, but I remember in the Usenet days, Usenet was just jam-packed with Power Rangers fan fiction, Star Trek fan fiction, from G all the way up to X. I've also seen some of this fan fiction sort of graduate, you know, to full publishing status. I can't remember the name of it, but I once read a Star Trek, the original series collection of stories written by fans, published on paper by a well-established publisher. And those stories were fantastic. So if this can encourage that kind of thing, I'm very excited.
Yeah, I think Amazon's going to pick up a large catalog of by aspiring authors who might be teenagers actually at that point, but I can't wait for the inevitable, you know, gossip little vampire combination thing that happens because, you know, somebody's going to go, oh, I can have all the characters in one universe.
See, that's where the fair use thing comes in. Can you get all of the authors on board for this that you would want when it should really just be a mashup that could be defensible? Or it could be a story about a 24-year-old girl named Shelby who tries out for The Voice. What comes after is not what she ever expected.
Oh, Tom.
Did you ask Google
That's
for that?
That's how they all start.
They all end up with, and then takes a different turn than anyone expects. And then what happens is surprising.
So I guess there is a market for this. It's Tom Merritt.
All right. No, I'm just reading it. I'm just passing it along to those who are interested.
I mean, Tom is an author, so.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to the most important issue in the nation yesterday afternoon on Twitter. Mm-hmm. The pronunciation of the graphics interchange format, as the inventor, Steve Wilhite, said at the Webbies and said to the New York Times, the Oxford English Dictionary accepts both pronunciations. They are wrong. It is a soft G pronounced GIF. End of story. Well, it was not the end of the story because people took to Twitter and say, what do you know, Wilhite? Just because you created the format. You don't get to change the English language. Julio Ojeda Zapata, writer, St. Paul Pioneer Press. Where do you come down on this very important and divisive issue?
Well, the guy who created the format, who's saying how it's pronounced, I hate to break it to him, but very often in these cases, pronunciations are ultimately determined by the masses. If the creator disagrees with the masses typically will win. That's how the English language, any other language, is shaped and molded as it moves into the future. That's just the way it is. I'm a newspaper writer, and I've seen that happen on the pages of the paper. URLs used to be italicized or boldfaced, and now they're part of the text. We used to use the HTTP. Now that's just kind of a tech example, but this stuff happens before your eyes, and the people who originally created this language very often just don't have any control over it. That's just the way it is.
Words of non-Germanic origin in English most often use a soft G before the letter I, gin, giraffe, giant. On the other hand, people say it stands for graphics interchange, not graphics, so that the acronym should be pronounced with the hard G. Ayaz, where do you come down on this?
Well, I'm glad that in my old days as a writer, I wouldn't have to worry about this. I would just type the letters and people would pronounce it in their heads. But now that I'm speaking to a microphone, I have to panic. I don't think it makes a dang difference. If the originator of the format is saying it's GIF, then fine. The people can hang their hat on that argument. And then other folks are going to hang their hat on the other argument of what, Tom, you just mentioned there. It just happens to be it's going to still be hotly debated. That's the weird thing, that people are going to pay attention to this story.
We change the pronunciation of other acronyms. NATO, North Atlantic, is not NATO. Humvee is HMMW-V. Sarah Lane, you and I have crossed swords on this issue before. Does this at all change your opinion of the proper pronunciation?
Well, hey, the creator of the GIF says that it's pronounced GIF. So I guess I can take some stock in what he wants, right? I mean, you know, it took me a while to think of Linux in my head as Linux rather than Linux because of Linus Torvalds, right? Because he's like, no, this is just how you say it. So people are like, okay. It's just been GIF in my head for so long that I think I'm going to have a hard time with it. And everybody knows that person with the last name that's pronounced in a way where you're like, well, I don't think your ancestors pronounced it that way, but okay, that's how you say it. So we're just going to have to go with it. So you know, maybe I'll try it on. Maybe I'll try to say animated GIF. Blech. No, never mind. Can't do that. Animated GIF forever.
Like how your last name is actually Sarah Lane, but you've just been okay with the fact that everyone calls you Sarah Lane.
Exactly. Right. We just didn't want to be so Germanic, yeah. You know, once we came over.
I see you on Twitter yesterday made a comment to me when I was like, see, it's there from the horse's mouth. Are you happy? And he said, the guy who invented Silly Putty wanted it to be plastic explosives. Too bad. It's Silly Putty. So there you go.
Now, here's the last thing I want to say is in pronouncing acronyms, there is no accepted rule. There's no Strunken White out there for it. So people are saying, no, he's changing the English. No, he's not changing the English language at all. I also disagree with them. I think it's fine for Sarah to say GIF. I think it's fine for people to say GIF. I agree with Julio's first point in this whole conversation, which is it's a living language. Maybe we'll come to a eventual consensus and we all agree on how this is pronounced. But in the meantime, can't we just agree to alternate pronunciations? The Oxford English Dictionary said, let's just all get along.
Yeah. Equal time for both, I say. This is perfect for people who could never actually remember the way they said it. So I'm pretty certain throughout my life I've said GIF and GIF equal amount of times.
GIF.
GIF.
Like GNOME.
Well, that's just wrong, Tom.
Just be totally wrong. That we can all agree is wrong.
Yes.
Let's move on to the randomizer. Returning to the Xbox One for a moment in the randomizer. Great, great story on Polygon today from Megan Farrow-Kamanish about the people watching the live stream on their Xbox of Xbox Reveal. And when they started demonstrating using Kinect for voice commands, their Xbox started recognizing those commands and shutting off the stream.
Excellent.
Excellent, yes. What does the X stands for?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I watched the live stream on my Xbox 360 and my Kinect paused the video every time a presenter said Xbox.
That's weird. That was always the fear of the clapper, right? The idea would be that the commercial itself would set off the clapper, but it was never sensitive enough that it could do that unless your volume was incredibly loud. It just means the Xbox needs this other Kinect sensor needs to be placed further away from the speakers.
No, it just means that it works really well. It does what it's advertised to
Xbox,
do.
Xbox, free
Maybe
order.
It doesn't give you the intended outcome as a user, but still, that's kind of impressive, right?
I think it should...
When this happened... When this happened, the first thing I thought of was my son, who I've tried to voice the Kinect. He's very Xbox crazed, and I've tried to get him interested in this Kinect device, and he absolutely won't have it. He just thinks it's the stupidest thing. So this would not have happened to him. I'm very curious to see what he will think of the next generation Kinect, which has better technology. But right now, he's like me, talking to your devices is just stupid. So.
I do think that this is a fixable issue. I think they could make it so that the Xbox would know when the voice is coming from the speakers. But let's move on to the calendar.
Let's do it. I'd like to say happy 40th birthday to Ethernet. Yeah, 40 years ago today, Bob Metcalf wrote down some sketches. It was a new way to connect networks. He thought he was onto something. And today we call it Ethernet. Oh, whoops. That's just how some people call it.
I prefer to call it Ethernet.
Ethernet, Yeah. Tomorrow, yeah. Both Salesforce and Pandora have their earnings reports. And Microsoft has confirmed Azure Cloud Computing Services is launching in China on June 6th.
Excellent. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a message from Josh Johnson in Greenville, South Carolina. He says, hey, TNT crew, I wanted to chime in about the new Flickr changes. Your guest, Kevin Purdy, said he didn't see how these changes would attract new users. In my opinion, these changes were more about getting the numerous users like myself who have had Flickr accounts for years but have been ignoring it to start using the service again. Personally, I love the new layout, and the 1 terabyte limit is awesome. You guys seemed really down on Flickr yesterday, but I just wanted to say that there's some of us who really like the new changes. Love the show.
Well, you're from the wrong Greenville, but I still agree with you, Josh Johnson. I think you're right. I think I was too hard on Flickr yesterday. I like Flickr. I use Flickr. I'm still not sure that this is the thing that sways people into using Flickr that don't, but maybe you're right. Maybe this isn't that step yet.
Got another email from Rob Barkey who says, hey, TNT crew, I didn't hear on your coverage or anyone else's coverage of the Xbox One about privacy. Since the Xbox One is always on and the new Kinect is always listening for you to say Xbox or other commands, then the device is always listening and possibly watching. The Xbox One is a step closer to the telescreen in George Orwell's 1984. He says, okay, I know that's paranoid, but do we trust Microsoft not to use this device in our homes to listen and look using the always-on Kinect? Well, I mean, that I feel like there are probably a lot of paranoid people who would agree with you, Robert. You kind of have to believe that that's not what's going on.
Xbox, order me a
Post-it.
To have
any fun at all, right?
Order me a Post-it to cover up the camera. We can solve this with low tech.
I guess so, right?
Brian Brushwood was trying to make this into an issue yesterday, and I sort of dismissed him that it'll become a big issue, but I don't think he's wrong that a lot of people will think this way. Either that or Brian Brushwood is writing us emails under the name Rob Barkey.
It is a suspicious sounding
camera,
name.
But then, you know, the Xbox becomes an expensive device that does a lot less.
Well, you just
so that's not really a good solution.
I mean, I've had friends in labs who constantly cover up their cameras and their laptops because they think they're being watched. So I'm sure paranoia just runs deep.
Still waters and paranoia.
My wife is the kind of person who she acknowledges this probably wouldn't happen, but there's a possibility that it could happen. That is enough for her. She's very cautious about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, sometimes it's just a slippery slope. That is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Julio Ojeda Zapata, thank you so much for joining us again. Always great having you on the show. Let folks know where they can find your work, not just at the St. Paul Pioneer Press, but I know you got books and websites and all kinds of things you're working on.
Yeah, ojezap.com is my hub, my homepage. So from there, you can go everywhere. So
check it out. Also check out our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's a place to let us know what kind of stories you'd like us to look at and cover. You can submit your own or vote on those submitted by others or do both. You can also find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. KTLA's own Rich DeMuro joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.